from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about the Hoosier Bard's production of what may be the first black comedy and film noir story, Arden at Feversham.
I'll find out about a new interpretation of the song Strange Fruit.
And I'll see if the Actors Theater of Indiana really does love a piano. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call.
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Arden of Feversham is perhaps the first black comedy and film noir play, and it's just possible that parts of it were written by a young Mr. Shakespeare. The Hoosier Bard Theater Company and IUPUI will be presenting it at the Central Library in their first collaboration. Travis DiNicola spoke with Shakespeare scholar Gary Taylor and actress Jaddy Chuchi about the play.
Jaddy, Gary, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you both.
Delighted to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Gary, it's always a pleasure to see you and see what Hoosier Bard is up to and bringing interesting pieces that have always an interesting connection to Shakespeare to
Absolutely.
Indianapolis. And this is a fun piece. And Jaddy, I know you're the female lead in this, and I want to talk to you about that in just a minute. But I want to get a little background on this play, Gary, if you would. Arden of Feversham. Right?
Yes, absolutely, which probably nobody listening to this has ever heard of.
I admit I did not hear of it until I knew we were doing the interview.
Yes, and it's usually called Arden of Faversham, which is the name of a town in England. But when Terry and I were looking at copies of the original text, they all say Feversham, and actually the...
It's a great name for you. And Terry is Terry Boris.
Who's directing the show and founder of Hoosier Bard and editor for the New Oxford Shakespeare. So she was looking at the original text and Feversham, and which nobody's ever mentioned or talked about. And then doing the text, we realized that the text actually plays on those words, fever and shame, in connection to the name. And this also fit in very well with the idea which Terry Boris had very early on, that this is an Elizabethan film noir, that it has all of the elements that we associate with 1940s films.
Like a double indemnity type of story.
Great films by Billy Wilder. It's about a murder. It's not like other Shakespeare plays. It's not about kings or people with magical powers or struggles for political power. It's about ordinary people. It's about a young wife conspiring to murder her rich older husband. All the people are, you know, ordinary people, a kind of people that you might meet in Indianapolis or any of its surrounding, you know, suburbs. And but it's so it's a murder story. It's got a lot of suspense in it. It has professional killers and amateur and amateur suckers, you know, who don't know what they're getting into. It even has fog. So it's a very modern story, but people have often suspected that Shakespeare might have had something to do with it.
There is some evidence that that when he was younger that he wrote part of this.
Yes, and increasing evidence as we get more sophisticated with our ability using databases and various kinds of high-tech evidence to identify Shakespeare's fingerprints. And Shakespeare, early in his career, did a fair amount of collaborative playwriting. And this could well be his first surviving playwriting. And a new book that's coming out from Oxford University Press in a couple of months makes a strong case that Shakespeare wrote five scenes of this play. And so we're considering whether to include it in the new complete works of Shakespeare that that we're editing and that Terry's team here at IUPUI is working on. So when we're confronted with this sort of question, one of the things we like to do is actually perform the play and see what we discover from
through the
from
course of the production itself.
The course of the production.
So, Jenna, you get to have – sounds like a great role here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gosh, Gary has said so many things that I would love to touch on.
Please do.
He mentioning even the title, Arden of Faversham, but then updating it to Fever Shame. And those terms, yes, they are definitely through lines within the show, but there are like both the names. I think the updating of the title, Fever and Shame, are both mentioned. Both actual words are mentioned in the script. And as far as we do have, like, as actors, we have the wonderful benefit of having Terry and Gary there to be our textual guides, really.
Yeah.
But that it is so interesting because we do have them as guides for us as actors, which is completely different. Usually, like, the way that in which we work is usually so different because we're looking at it at a we know they're looking at it from a scholarly point of view. We know that they're looking at it from a textual point of view, and we're trying to.
And
put
they're
this
using
thing on
the play to discover those things.
Yeah, and and we are trying to find this story that is really not done that in the United States. Really,
yeah.
I know it's done in England a lot.
Yes,
Gary.
It's been done in England quite a bit, and in fact, the Royal Shakespeare Company is doing a production of it. I guess they heard that Terry was doing it, and they decided to follow.
Well, they have
lead.
To jump on that train, of course.
They're doing it later this summer. So
interesting.
But but what's so nice is that we actually get to layer on this element of film noir and use the character of a femme fatale, like Alice, which is the character that I play, her name is spelled as Alice in the United States, you know, Alice, but we pronounce it Alice. She definitely is a femme fatale in many ways. I mean, she is a very complicated woman, which is wonderful to play in something that may be, you know, partially Shakespeare, because the entire story really does focus around her story. It is called Arden of Faversham, Arden of Fevershame, you know, or the tragedy of Arden of Fevershame, focusing on his tragedy. But
it's also a bit of a black comedy too, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a lot of comedic elements in this.
There are many comedic elements in it. Blackwell and Shakebag are two characters who you think should be really dark characters, and they are, because they are the murderers, but they end up bringing all this comedy to it, and there really is a home comedy to it too, domestic comedy to Arden and Alice, and even I haven't even actually found it that much in Alice and her lovers' scenes, in Mosby's scenes.
Lovers multiple.
That's questionable, actually. That she may, I mean, even in the sense of watching Double Indemnity or other film noir movies, these femme fatales do end up in the end saying, like, you were never my true love, you were just the conduit or the...
Yeah. Never the first, never the
last. Yeah, you were just the catalyst to get to the end of a means and to get rid of my husband, which is what Alice's prerogative is. But there isn't a lot of comedy there, I don't think, because that all seems really heightened drama to me. So that's hard to find the really hard drama.
It sounds like a really complex play, actually. I mean, pretty fascinating work. And the approach that you were all taking, the whole production team is taking, makes it even more interesting.
Well, it is a complicated play and a very interesting play. And it's the first important play written in English where the lead character is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it fascinating in its own right. You know, Shakespeare plays, you're used to there not being any women on the stage or very few.
Well, and she's not
roles.
A queen, and she's not a woman necessarily
woman.
Of nobility.
She's a young woman who's unhappy in her marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And she is made the center of the play.
That alone is
pretty fascinating. By quite a bit. But not just the longest role, but an extraordinarily complicated character.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fascinating in that way. But also there is this element of black comedy in it because the two funniest people in the play are, you know, professional killers.
Mm-hmm.
And those two roles are being played by Ben Asequi, who's the artistic director of Q Artistry, and Thomas Cardwell, who's the artistic director of Eclectic Pond. So we have a fabulous cast and crew. We're going to have live musical accompaniment by
Paige Scott.
By Paige Scott, who's musical Bomb on a Bus is playing right now, and mm-hmm. who had a big success with Hedwig earlier this year.
Sure.
So
excellent.
It's a great collection of local talent.
Mm-hmm.
Putting on something that, of course, nobody, none of them have ever done before, but a play that that is really fascinating and that we have found, as so often happens, that when you go from the text to actually putting it on, you discover really how wonderful the play is. These scripts were meant to be performed. And a fabulous, complicated play, a fabulous central female character, and a great cast.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to checking this out. It sounds like it'll be a delightful evening of theater. Gary, Jatty, thank you so much for coming in. Are the Matter? It's been a real pleasure.
Thank
Our
you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with Shakespeare scholar Gary Taylor and Hoosier Bard actress Jatty Chuchi. Arden of Feversham will be presented on April 4th, 5th, 11th, and 12th, again April 4, 5, 11, and 12, at Central Library's Clues Auditorium. More information is available at the Hoosier Bard Facebook page. Just search for Hoosier Bard. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Indiana has a strange relationship to Strange Fruit, the song made famous by Billie Holiday. The lyrics were inspired by the 1930 lynching of two African-American men in Marion. The song has inspired artists of all kinds for decades, including filmmaker Liz Meyer Bolton and her colleague at the Christian Theological Seminary, Frank Thomas. They're both ministers and teachers, and with their production team, they wanted to explore the Christian symbolism of Strange Fruit. Sharon Gamble invited them in to tell their story.
So before we talk about the Strange Fruit video that you've created, tell us about what is the SALT Project? How did this start?
We started back when we were in Boston to try and make sort of artisanal resources for churches, something that was beautiful with theological depth to get communities of faith talking about important matters.
And the SALT in the name of the project is a reference to?
To Jesus' quote in Matthew, "You are the salt of the world, but if salt has lost its saltiness, how can it be restored?"
Mm.
So if Christianity, mainline Christianity, has lost its beauty, its mystery, how can its beauty be restored? And we're trying to be one part of that answer.
And my sense is that this is a fairly ecumenical endeavor.
Yes, yes. We have done branch out ecumenically within lots of different Christian traditions. Uh-huh. And we also try and do some interfaith pieces in partnership with WFYI. We did the last 4 minutes of the Martin Luther King speech just to get communities across the country talking about how far we've come uh-huh. since these words were spoken.
Uh-huh. So, Strange Fruit, let's talk about this particular video project. And I just want you to tell me, Frank, tell me how you got involved and why you were attracted to the project.
Liz walked up to me one day and said, I'm thinking about doing something on the 75th anniversary of Strange Fruit, and I would like for you to see if you'd be willing to write a sermon to it. And, of course, I love those kind of challenges. It's a very creative outlet. And it's a wonderful, wonderful way to be expressive about something very significant. I mean, it's a very significant event, the song, and the legacy to which the song is heir to. So I was excited, and we just moved from there.
Sure. For anybody who maybe doesn't know the circumstances, there are people who know about the Marion lynchings, and there are people who've heard the song Strange Fruit and for whatever reason have never connected them. So tell us that story.
There was a lynching in August 7th, 1930, in Marion, Indiana. There were three men that were accused of violence, and they were put in jail. And then while they were being held, a mob broke into the jail and took two of the young men, 18 and 19, out and lynched them on the court square. In front of thousands of people. And a photographer came and took a picture of the scene and stayed up 10 days and 10 nights making copies. Mm. I guess they turned them into postcards to sort of display civic pride and white supremacy. And so he made thousands and thousands of copies of this photograph that he took. And one of those copies made its way to New York City, which there were a lot of artists and activists working on the terrorism known as lynching. And a white Jewish high school teacher had that photograph and wrote a poem called Bitter Fruit in 1937. And his wife started to sing it in Madison Square Garden, famously. And then Billie Holiday started to sing it as a protest song.
And the author is, there was a wonderful Morning Edition piece that a lot of our listeners might have heard a few months ago, a little profile of Abel Meeropol.
Yes.
Who, with his wife, and this is just a, I hope you're thinking about exploring this in a future film, with his wife adopted the Rosenbergs' children after they were
yes.
executed. And it's just astonishing.
Yeah.
But the Billie Holiday connection, let's talk about that club where she sang.
You know, it's an amazing piece. She would end her performances with that, and they would demand that the waiters would stop serving. They would then only one light on her, and it was the final song with absolutely no encore at all. And she ended her performances this way. And it really just left the audience. And I wish I could have been there just to experience it,
right.
What it must have been like. Because I have a glimpse and a glimmer after my parents saw the film that we put together. They were in stone silence. And I would imagine that it brings up so many feelings and thoughts that one sits in silence to take it all in, and then decide what one is willing to do or not do.
Right. And it's such a, and it was a nightclub, a club called Cafe Society in Greenwich Village, which,
yes.
as I understand, has a reputation as the first integrated nightclub in New York City.
Yes.
And to think of this, you know, people, what do you do in a nightclub? You sing, you dance, you drink, and then there's this invocation or prayer or, I mean, it's,
see, there's a long history, of course, African Americans and not only African American artists. You can sing what you may not be able to say.
Hmm.
And so African Americans have always used slaves and with spirituals. They've always had a political or a social or a call to justice aspect to it. So it's not unusual that in a performance, it's very hard to perform as strictly entertainment and ignore suffering and pain and racism and prejudice. So preachers, poets, songwriters have always had some edge to of social commentary as African-American people have searched for democracy.
Sure. You can't just lock it in a little compartment over mm-hmm. there and say, and now I'm just a singer, now I'm just a poet.
Right.
So this video, how was it first distributed? How do you intend for it to be distributed? How do you want it to be used out in the world?
Well, we wanted to mark the anniversary. Frank and I, when we were getting ready to shoot it, went up to Marion, Indiana, to walk from the jail to the courthouse, and we were looking for some sort of plaque or some sort of memorial mm-hmm. of what happened, and we couldn't find anything. There was a lot of memorials for World War I and World War II and Korean War, Vietnam War, the Persian Gulf, but nothing for these two men. And so we wanted to make sort of a marker or a plaque. And wanted to introduce this song and this story to a new generation. Mm. You know, a lot of people don't know Strange Fruit, the song. And so we want to get it out into communities of faith. We want to get it out on the web. We want to get it out in white churches and in African-American churches and in high schools. There's some Catholic high schools in Indianapolis who are watching it with their high school classes, and just get as many eyes on it as we can, just to not dismiss it, not put it under the rug, that this is, you know, a legacy both the African-American community and the Anglo community share, and just to open it up for discussion. So our actual hard copy DVD of it, and if you download it off the SALT site, has a study guide just to talk about suffering, to talk about the role of art in overcoming suffering, to talk about where the lynching tree is now.
Mm-hmm. Did you encounter a town historian in Marion or someone who maybe gave you a context for why there's not a marker?
We did not ask. We went to the library. The librarian was very helpful, gave us resources.
Mm-hmm.
And there we talked to a couple people, and the sense that we got was that it's discussed, but they're very different versions. The word "some say" was used tremendously in, you know, "some say," because there's a dialogue, and I think there are different versions of what happened.
And it's a hard thing to talk about. You know, I mean, I think this particular event, there were thousands of people there, and, you know, you don't want your city to be famous for something like that.
Sure.
And I feel like it's wrapped up in identity and what would it mean to put a marker there? You know, it's not something you want to lead with, but it's not something you want to ignore either. I mean, it's a delicate thing.
Mm-hmm. When did it hit you, the parallel stories that are told in Strange Fruit and in the story of the crucifixion?
Mm-hmm. I
all eyes to Frank, professor of homiletics.
Well, when Liz presented the idea, I just went home. You know, I love the challenge of creative preaching. And I just kind of meditated on it, you know, prayed on it, and then I saw, you know, the tree in the garden, and then I saw Calvary, and then I saw the tree in Revelations, and then I started writing. So once you start writing, it just connected up for me, and So it was a great challenge, and also fun to do. It's the creative use of scripture for real living. So what preacher wouldn't like that? You know?
And I think a lot of Christian communities see the events of scripture through their own lens, through their own lives. James Cone wrote a book called The Cross and the Lynching Tree, mm-hmm. that the African-American community has been seeing the similarities between lynching and crucifixion for a long time.
Right.
So we wanted to bring that to light, too.
How did you decide on the set for this video? There are these beautiful, they're branch-like.
Yep.
These pieces on the set. And of course, we're going to tell you how to see this video, listeners, if you're like, wait, I need the picture. But there are these branches and these structures hanging that remind me, I know they aren't, but they remind me of the Japanese tradition of making paper cranes for peace. You make 1,000 paper cranes and hang them. But
yes.
That may not have been where you were coming from at all.
Well, I love art direction, and I have a friend who we conspired together on the scene, and we cut out all those magnolias. And we wanted to reference the tree and the branches and the song, because part of Holiday Song is about the scent of magnolias. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to reference the lynching tree, but we wanted to redeem it at the same time. So we have the wood and the branches and they're blooming. And we wanted it to be both like the song, haunting and beautiful at the same time. So that's what we were going for.
Sharon Gamble with Liz Meyer Bolton and Frank Thomas. Liz produced and Frank narrated, and with their production team, they created a short film that explores the Christian symbolism of the Abraham Mirapol song, Strange Fruit, to honor the 75th anniversary of the song. Learn more about the film at saltproject.org. Again, that's saltproject.org. And you can also learn more about Strange Fruit and see the video on the Art of the Matter TV show on April 15th. You'll also be able to hear a performance by Marietta Simpson and Tyrone Cooper, a collaboration with Art Salad Productions. Hey, Sharon.
Yes, Travis.
So, April showers, what do they bring?
Mayflowers.
That's right. But you know what? One of my favorite things, I mean, it does feel like spring now. So, you know, here we go. And I don't know. I have no idea what
I thought
I'm
you were going to say something about the Niña, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria.
There we go. Well, we'll figure out what we're saying on the calendar we call.
What do we do? Hey, I want you to prepare yourself for a phenomenal party in paradise.
Now oh, please.
Excellent. Now that it's actually April, that's spelled with a silent PH, by the way, on April 26th, it's time for Indie Reads Alphabet Affair, brought to you by, yes, you guessed it, dear listeners, the letter P. So, you know the hook on this thing. This is not your typical staid black tie dinner, although you're welcome to wear cocktail attire, but you're much more encouraged to dress in something that starts with the letter that sponsors the event, which, again, this year is P. So you could be a pastor, a peacock, a patriarch, a paralegal, a photographer, a pirate, a parrot, a pawn, or a king. I feel like I'm suddenly doing a Frank Sinatra song.
You do that pretty well.
I don't know why. But anyway, you can find out more at indiereads.org. And not only can you dress in something groovy, and I love the cocktail part of this evening where people walk around trying to figure out what each other is dressed as. What are you? I don't quite get it. But also, the menu is inspired by that letter. And I saw a photo of some of the prawns delicious and pork. Food. Mm-hmm. Yes, on Facebook. It looks amazing.
And artist Mab Graves will be doing paper doll demonstrations. The jumble cartoonist Jeff Knurk will be doing live puzzling demonstrations as well.
Fantastic. That's spelled with a
P, of course.
Of course.
Of course.
So Saturday, April 26th, IndieReads.org for more information on that.
It should be a phenomenal party in paradise. Thanks, Sharon.
Positively.
Positively. Hey, the IRT has just announced their new season for 2014-2015 and some really fun stuff on it. Opening up next fall with Two Gentlemen of Verona by that Shakespeare guy. And then this one I'm really excited about, Red by John Logan. This is the play that came out a couple years ago based on the painter Mark Rothko. And a really, really great sort of fascinating look at the mind of Rothko and how he created his work and dealing with the struggles he had with some of his commissions. And this would be just a great piece. It was the winner of a Drama Desk Award and Tony for Best Play a few years back. And then, of course, they'll be doing Christmas Carol, and then followed by a play called The Good People, and then The Giver, based on the Newbery Award-winning novel, and then some Sherlock Holmes with Hound of the Baskervilles.
Ooh.
And then they wrap up the season with What I Learned in Paris and On Golden Pond, which is just delightful. So that sounds like a great season for next year. But if you can't wait, well, The Mountaintop is coming to the IRT April 1st through the 27th. And this is starring local actor David Alan Anderson as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And again, this is The Mountaintop, which opens on, actually, the first night is April 4th, but they have some previews starting April 1st, runs through pretty much all of April. And more information is at irtlive.com.
Love it. Hey, I have two ballet events for you. One is early in the month. The other is late in the month. They're both at Butler University. The one that's early in the month, and these two are tied together. They're the first event is on April 8th, which is a Tuesday at 7:30 at Clues Memorial Hall, and it's called Ballet 101. James Kramer, who by day is the community relations manager for Clues Memorial Hall, but for his entire life has been a dancer. He's going to introduce the art form of ballet in a brief history with an interactive demonstration. Lots of opportunity for questions. You can even participate in a movement exercise, so you're going to want to dress comfortably. But if you've been going, whether you're new to ballet or you've been going for years and you're just kind of curious about, well, why do they do that? What is the vocabulary I'm seeing here? James is a great person to explain all that. That's Tuesday, April 8th at 7:30. And it will prepare you very well to come back from Friday, April 25th through Sunday, April 27th to see Butler Ballet's production of Cinderella. So the conversation, Tuesday, April 8th, Cinderella, presented by Butler Ballet, Friday, April 25th to Sunday, April 27th at various times.
Well, Sharon, that makes me think of more dance and something going on this weekend. The Gregory Hancock Dance Theater is presenting Superhero. This is their production of The Story of the Man Called Jesus is the subtitle. And they've taken this idea, I'm sort of a little bit like a Godspell or Jesus Christ Superstar idea, but have put it into a dance theater piece. And it is Superhero. And it's the 4th and 5th at 7 p.m. at the Tarkington at the Center for the Performing Arts up in Carmel. Again, that's Gregory Hancock Dance Theater's Superhero.
Connor Prairie is doing something really yummy.
They're doing a lot of cool stuff.
They're doing a lot of cool stuff.
I mean,
it's like,
a lot of
wow,
things they seem
yeah,
to be planning
new
for
programs
this summer. What are you guys?
Well, in particular, Prairie Plates. They're doing a series mm-hmm. of, and they've been involved with dinners and dining for a long time, but they've kind of kicked it up a notch with Prairie Plates on April 10th. It's a dinner with Joseph Dequeese at
That's
the Chinese
so cool.
House. And the Chinese House is on Connor Prairie's historic grounds. It was kind of a getaway house for the Lilly family, and it's an intimate space. And if you go to this event, you'll have a chance to have fine wine and food pairings. And I mean, if you don't know about Joseph Dequeese, it's Dequeese. Go to an internet search engine and learn about them, because they have kind of revolutionized the small town of Roanoke near Fort Wayne. and are leading.
I mean, known across the
carrying the banner across the country for farm to farm to fork experiences, and they're partnering with Connor Prairie, so you don't have to go all the way to Roanoke. You can find out more at connorprairie.org, and they have lots of other Prairie Plates events coming up too. So check that out at connorprairie.org.
Yeah, I've heard that those are great. I've had some friends who have gone to those, and they sound like they're a lot of fun. Something else Connor Prairie is doing that I wanted to mention is that they are focusing on autism, and as part of Autism Awareness Month throughout April. And in fact, the museum is going to be open and offering free admission from 9 to 10 a.m. on April 5th and 12th for families who are dealing with autism. And so that's a really nice thing. They're also doing some special programming dealing with sensory or other developmental challenges and ways that families who are you know, have a child who has been diagnosed with autism can go and enjoy Connor Prairie. It's part of a program that's sponsored through Daymar Services, and they're doing these sort of designated quiet spots, as well as special sensory kits with weighted blankets and soft sensory toys, and a whole bunch of other things that that families who may not be able to you know, enjoy something like Connor Prairie on a regular basis can do. I think it's a great idea. It's a really great innovative thing for a museum to be taking on. So cool that Connor Prairie is doing that.
Very smart. Hey, Primary Colors is presenting an opportunity that partners Gennesaret Free Clinics with the Artists of Primary Colors. And this is the 15th year for Gennesaret Free Clinics' anniversary of providing vital healthcare services to the most vulnerable people in our community through a fundraising event called Art for Beds. So what they do is they get artists to donate their works, and then they auction these works off. And the money raised goes to the Gennesaret Free Clinic, which, if you don't know about, you might want to find out more about online. I'm going to spell it for you. Gennesaret. Their event is not a fancy sit-down dinner. In fact, it's on a Sunday, April 27th. So you can go and get yourself some good art and benefit a terrific cause.
Very cool. Hey, I like free.
Right. Free is good.
Free is good. And free is what the admission is to the Italian Film Festival. This is taking place at IUPUI. Most of the showings of these movies are in the Lilly Auditorium at IUPUI, starting April 12th and running into May. 9 different films that are Italian films in Italian with English subtitles, 7 feature-length films and 2 documentaries that are going to be shown as part of this year's Italian Film Festival. You can get a lot more information about this if you go online to italianfilmfest.org. Again, italianfilmfest.org. The first film is on April 12th at 2 p.m. in the Lilly Auditorium, and it's titled, appropriately enough, Viva l'Italia. And then that's followed again through the rest of the month and then into May, through May 10th, with a whole series of free Italian films. Should be a lot of fun. Bring some pasta and some wine, and you'll have a great time.
Hey, Travis, do you have tap shoes?
I do not own tap shoes, Sharon, though I have been known every now and then to make my own at home and tap dance with my cats. Why do you ask?
I just didn't know where that sentence was going.
Yes.
Well, there is a...
Oh, you need some duct tape and a quarter. You know, just... anyway.
On the cat's feet or your own?
Never mind.
I don't go there. Tap Man Productions and Indie Fringe are presenting Tap Battles on April 11th, 12th, and 13th. On the 11th and 12th, it's at 7:30, and the 13th, it's at 3 in the Basile Theater. That's the Indie Fringe Basile Theater at 719 East St. Clair Street. And there's a free DVD with every ticket purchase.
Oh, cool.
The company is a Chicago-based company. It's called The Tap Men, and they combine contemporary tap dance choreography and improvisation with original video and live music. So tap battles, you don't get that many chances to see just straight ahead only tap dancing. But that's coming up April 11th through the 13th at the Indie Fringe Basile Theater. You can learn more and get tickets at indiefringe.org.
Hey, I know there's a lot of Carrie Newcomer fans out there, and she has a new CD coming out, her 12th studio recording. It's called A Permeable Life, and it is out now, just came out, in fact, this week, and it's available from Available Light Records, and there's also a companion book A Permeable Life, Poems and Essays. And so that is available now. And then she's going to be performing in Indianapolis on May 3rd to promote this. It's at the First Friends meeting. And that's a very cool thing. So check out Carrie Newcomer. If you're already a fan, then you probably know about some of this and have seen her information on Facebook. If you don't, well, she's just a delight. And we hope to have her on soon and hear about this new CD.
Absolutely. Hey, only a couple weeks left to see a beautiful, tender love story. It's about Caroline, who is a high school kid.
Caroline?
Yeah, well, she is kind of sweet. She's a high school kid, and she's sick, and she hasn't been to school in months. She's kind of working on her homework from home. But one day, there's a knock on the door, and a young guy, a classmate called Anthony, is there, and he has with him waffle fries, a beat-up copy of Walt Whitman's Song of Myself, and an urgent assignment from their high school English teacher.
You got me at waffle fries.
Waffle fries. I know. Well, you know, courting isn't what it used to be. What can I say? So it's obviously a love story and a seemingly innocent poetry assignment unlocks a much deeper mystery that brings them together. The play is called I and You. It's by Lauren Gunderson, and it's part of a Rolling World premiere at the Phoenix Theater on the Basile stage. That's the more intimate theater, seating about 75 people. So intimate love story told up close and personal. Find out more at phoenixtheater.org.
Very good. Hey, speaking of love stories, well, anything goes when it comes to love, of course. And that Cole Porter classic, Anything Goes, is playing now at Beef and Board's Dinner Theater with some great songs, including It's Da Lovely, I Get a Kick Out of You, and You're the Top, and of course, Anything Goes. Speaking of tap dancing, Sharon, audiences will be tapping their toes because it is such a great, fun show. So that is up at Beef and Board's Dinner Theater, and that is running now through May 11th.
Hey, this Saturday night, you know, the Jazz Kitchen, that cool jazz club, intimate jazz club up on College Avenue in that wonderful 1920s building, they're celebrating, can you believe it, 20 years.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Nice job, David Ali.
Yeah. And Steve Ali, papa to the aforementioned David, is bringing his big band for a 20th anniversary celebration this Saturday night. There's a set at 7:30. And you probably want to scramble and get your tickets quickly for that one. There's also a 10 o'clock set for you late night sorts. So
Very good. Lots
of things to eat and drink there on their menu, and you can help them celebrate 20 years of bringing jazz to Indy.
Excellent. Well, Sharon, that's all the time we have, but we will be back next week with that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
I Love a Piano is a dazzling look at America through the hopeful and romantic eyes of Irving Berlin. It includes some great classics such as Blue Skies, Puttin' on the Ritz, Cheek to Cheek, Anything You Can Do, God Bless America, and of course, I Love a Piano. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Actors Theater of Indiana's Cynthia Collins to learn more.
Cynthia, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
Thank you.
Even if you're just here alone without the rest of the trio, you know, I am used to seeing you with Don and Judy.
My bookends.
Your bookends. Actors Theater of Indiana is just chugging along with more great productions up in Carmel. And I Love a Piano is the next one. How fun is this?
That's right. It is I Love a Piano. It is the music of Irving Berlin. It is a six-person cast.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the three of us are in it.
Judy Fitzgerald as well.
Judy Fitzgerald, Don Farrell, and myself. Mm-hmm. We are all going to be in this one because it's the last show of this season.
Sure.
And it's the only show this season that all three of us are in. Hmm. And then we have three other wonderful people in the show, just regulars that we, you know, friends of ours from New York, Bradley Reynolds and Mary Jane Waddell, and a friend of ours from L.A., Michael Dotson, and they've all been in ATI productions, and yeah. People come and see this, they'll recognize them and remember, oh, yes, Bradley was an Odd Couple, and MJ was an Andrews Brothers, and so forth and so on. But it's just a real, pure musical review mm-hmm. of Berlin's music.
What's the setup for this, for I Love a Piano?
Well,
I mean, yeah.
What our director, we have two director/choreographers working mm-hmm. together, collaborating on this, Kenny Shepherd and Carol Worsell. And they are absolutely wonderful. They've been in our shows as well, and they're old friends of ours. And they have put together, actually, they have, in a way, they've kind of reinvented this show.
Hmm.
The show, when it was first produced, it was a bit longer.
Okay.
And it had a lot more dialogue. And what they've done is they have streamlined it, which, to me, is mm-hmm. fantastic because it flows, the flow of it, just it flows so much better. And they've really done a wonderful job with it. So what you are really seeing is you are seeing like the true form of a review mm-hmm. of Irving Berlin's music. And it spans, though it will span from his early works. I mean, the man spanned like 5 decades.
Right, sure.
You know, so it will span from his early works in the 19 teens all mm-hmm. the way up to the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Annie Get Your Gun,
right,
and
right,
Easter
right.
Parade, and of course, God Bless America, and of course, goes without saying, White Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
The music of that will be
I was
there
wondering.
As well.
I mean, I kind of assumed. But,
hello,
know.
Right? I mean, so.
And putting on the Ritz.
Putting on the Ritz.
Cheek
and,
to cheek. And so many fun ones.
The Best Things Happen While You're Dancing. So it will span his music in order.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a ton of dancing in this show.
Okay, great.
So,
great.
Yeah, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just. It's just really pure entertainment. If you want to go and hear some good Irving Berlin music and be purely just entertained that night and forget whatever you were doing that day and just sit back and relax and have a drink because you are allowed to bring alcohol into the studio theater.
Good to know.
And so just sit back, drink some wine or whatever you prefer and watch some really good, I'd say singing and dancing because Carol and Kenny put together a good production. And that's why I'm excited.
This sounds, just like a lot of fun. And like you said, great music. I mean, Annie Get Your Gun, that's one of my all-time favorite musicals anyway.
Yeah.
Just, you know, one great number after the next. What numbers do you get to work
on? What do I do? Well, I don't sing any of the numbers from Annie Get Your Gun, I can tell you that. That is reserved for Judy.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. Mary Jane, who we mm-hmm. call MJ. But I'll be doing some stuff from Easter Parade,
okay.
A Couple of Swells, which is one of my favorite songs, if you know it. It was Fred Astaire and Judy Garland did it. And What'll I Do?
Mm-hmm.
You know that ballad.
It's a gorgeous song.
Gorgeous song. It's one of his most beautiful mm-hmm. songs. And of course, we're all singing together like There's No Business, like Show Business
sure.
and God Bless America.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a whole army section because he was,
mm-hmm.
it was World War II is where he, World War, I'm, please excuse me, it was World War One, actually, where he,
first got started.
The First World War, mm-hmm. where he started writing those numbers like, Oh, How I Hate to Get Up in the Morning, and You're in the Army, Mr. Jones. So
mm-hmm.
so he really did start there. So there is an entire section dedicated to his quote-unquote war songs,
sure.
I'll say.
Okay.
And I don't know. I just think it's going to be really interesting.
Is this the first time you guys have done this one? Here?
We've never done this
yeah,
before,
I didn't think so.
And
okay.
we've never done any Irving mm-hmm. Berlin
yeah.
reviews or, and his shows are so big, we've never done any of the shows because mm-hmm. they're pretty big.
Yeah.
You can imagine, as we said, Annie Get Your Gun, huge.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we've come close with doing a Rosemary Clooney cabaret, so of
okay.
course all the White Christmas music was in there. But no, we never have. So I mean, that was, you know, I guess that probably did. Thinking back, going into our planning mm-hmm. for this season, we thought, well, we've hit Cole Porter. We've hit, you know, a lot of stuff with the Frank Sinatra because he spanned
sure.
so many of the composers. And
seems like a great compliment to the rest of what you've been doing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it's the Great American Songbook,
mm-hmm.
which is fantastic up there because.
Sure, because you're performing up the Center for Performing Arts and Michael Feinstein and all those connections.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
Exactly.
Very fun. Very fun. So this show opens April 25th, runs through the 11th.
Yep.
Of course, you can get tickets and more information at Actors Theater of Indiana. And how are things at the Actors Theater?
They are bustling.
Yeah.
As usual. We just had our gala, our fundraiser mm-hmm. in Carmel, Woodland Country Club. And
Tim Brickley played at that.
That's
very
right.
cool.
That's mm-hmm. right. He's a good friend. And, mm-hmm. and it was really a really nice evening. It always is. You know, it's mm-hmm. always nice to have good music and good food and good people to surrounding you. And so we just did that. And now we're on to, of course, promoting this, mm-hmm. obviously this show, and just getting all the PR about this going. And then we start rehearsals in a week. So once we start rehearsals, you just
boom,
dive.
Boom, boom.
Exactly. You're just diving in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put on your performer hat and just get going and get the show up. So really, it's, you know, how we just try to keep things one step at a time.
You
know, now we're
That's
working on I Love
do.
A Piano, and so our mm-hmm. heads don't completely explode.
Well, it sounds like this will be a great show, great review, some absolutely terrific songs, and it should be a lot of fun, and great dancing as well. Right?
Yeah, and especially
you got to have great dancing with some
and tap,
put it on the Ritz, right? You got to have some tap there.
Everything's in there. There's tap in there, and there's ballroom, and there's and just some good old theater, musical theater jazz.
Excellent.
Yes.
Very good. Well, Cynthia, thank you so much for coming in. Art of the Matter.
Thanks, Travis.
Always a pleasure.
It. Yeah, thanks.
Travis DiNicola with the Actors Theater of Indiana's Cynthia Collins. I Love a Piano runs from April 25th through May 11th. More information is available at actorstheaterofindiana.org. That's spelled theater with an R-E at the end, so actorstheaterofindiana.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll get a preview of Orange's little sister, Tangerine.
I'll find out about the Shining Light Film Festival.
And I'll talk with poet Norbert Kropf about his new book of poems. Plus, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more. Please listen to The Art of the Matter next weekend here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.